Hey guys, it's Doc from DLC. It's the 18th of June. I've been fortunate enough to catch up with David Whitby. Are you there, David?
I'm here. Thank you, Doc.
Okay, so we know that you were recently appointed to the board of SEB Resources. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that appointment from what's pretty much an unknown entity in SEB?
I spent some time in the public markets in with Nita Petroleum, wanted to get back into it. I had an idea that I worked on about 3 years ago about in Indonesia particularly. Worked on it in pretty detailed in starting in January last year. It wasn't until a couple of months ago I hooked up with the management of Northcott, and they made some introductions and saw the story, and then connected me up with SEB Resources, and then did our first raising. So it was sort of a very serendipitous event to meet Randy and Ross, and here we are today.
All right, so I've taken a look at your CV. I've looked at, done a bit of due diligence on Mr. David Whitby, but and naturally you seem pretty well versed in Indonesia with the length and breadth and experience that you've got out there. But perhaps for listeners that don't know a lot about you, do you want to tell us a little bit about your background and where you come from?
I hope people don't get too bored with it. I Canadian by birth. I started my took my engineering degree at the Royal Military College, then was an army officer for 4 years, and got into the oil industry with Husky Oil and Lloydminster. Started at the lowest of the rung, pumping wells and cleaning tanks and stuff like that. And that sort of started it all, learning the industry from the very ground floor. Went through my stint as being a reservoir engineer, was sort of reservoir engineering manager for Husky. And in 1990, we decided, my wife and I and daughter Rebecca, who was 4, decided we'd go to Indonesia, and that started the love affair there. I was very fortunate in Indonesia. I had the opportunity. The company had made one untested gas well, so my job was do something with it. Well, and that started the gas industry. I guess at the end of the day, I've done it about 5 times and contracted a little over 10 TCF of gas into Caltex, Central Sumatra, exported it over to Singapore, and also sold it down to West Java. So it's been a pretty rare opportunity to be able to do that type of stuff. But I think the thing that I was probably most proud of is that when I was vice president of Conoco, I'd advise them that we should, unitize one of the big gas fields, Kosuga, 7.4 TCF. But anyway, in Pertamina, it was had the acreage outside, and Conoco at that time decided they wouldn't negotiate with Pertamina. Well, about 6 months later, Pertamina, after I'd retired from Conoco, Pertamina asked me if I would come and represent them against Conoco in the unitization, which was probably the most gratifying project I had. And that ended up very well, which put me in good stead in the country and also within Pertamina itself. So yeah, it's been a really heck of a run, I tell you.
So, is that your biggest success? Where you
Oh, I think that's one I'm most proud of. That one generated Pertamina, $260 million a year of incremental revenue for almost 17 years. So that was a big one. But I think also when I was in Australia, taking Nito Petroleum from a really micro cap of 1.6 million up to a market cap of 620 million, that was an interesting ride as well. I've had a few runs on the board, but learned a few things and made a few mistakes and decided to give it one more go, except to improve the record, I guess.
Well, I'll tell you what,
Yeah, that.
if 1.6 million to 600 million is a mistake, then gosh, we're in for a ride here. So look, I know a little bit about Indonesia and companies in the junior space that have operated out there. I know that there's a number of ups and downs to operating within Indonesia, but and getting the right ingredients is paramount. However, I also understand the needs for these PSCs that have been agreed with a lot of companies, both small or junior, medium, and large cap businesses that really aren't progressing things as fast as I think you know, that the indigenous people or the government of Indonesia really would like. So, you know, for me, it's important to see, whilst I'm aware there's a conscious effort to get on, you know, whether, you know, you can give us a directive as to how you're going to perhaps progress things in a quicker manner than those that have tried before you.
Well, I think first of all, you're absolutely right. A lot of people don't understand Indonesia. Indonesia's a place that has fabulous opportunity, but you have to sort of know how to unlock it. A lot of people come in, they give it a go, they don't really understand it, they get frustrated, they leave, and one other thing. I always tell people, you see, you've got to do it the Indonesian way. You've got to get a good crew of Indonesian talent, and I have really an eclectic group of, you know, trusted and gifted colleagues that I've worked here for 15 years that have worked with me on the gas projects. So this is like the Blues Brothers. You're bringing the band back together, and we sort of, that's the way to do it. It's all a matter of relationships. It's a matter of spending time. It's a matter of learning what everybody wants to do, learning how it, listening to a great extent, and then deciding how you're going to do it. But for Seb, I'm quite happy to sort of stay at the smaller end. There is a plethora of opportunities to bring oil production on. Not particularly interested in exploring offshore. I did that in Nido. You know, when it takes you 60 days to drill a well, everybody gets bored after about day 30. So in Australia or in Indonesia, we're going to stay on shore. There is a number of fields that we've looked at for 18 months. Some of them haven't, you know, we're shut in 1993 and producing 1,000 barrels a day, that type of stuff, and the oil price was $20. You know, nobody's gone back to look at them. One we looked at had a, you know, as an investment, you know, was producing oil at 50 degree gravity, and they were using atmospheric treaters. Well, you're gonna lose 15% of that just before you even start. So this is where the opportunity. I've been at the big end of town. I'm really quite happy to sort of to get at the grubby end of the pool and just make a fair bit of oil, particularly onshore. The boat, the crew is well networked, and we'll just work it until we win.
All right. So sounds good to me. So, you know, we see oodles of companies coming to AIM, right? They all hit the small cap area. You know, most come at a snail's pace. So I guess the thing that investors are all looking for is a bang for the buck. Are you going to give them that bang?
Oh, I think so. I think you can pretty well take that to the bank, Doc. But I always say, you know, you look at focus, asset depth, and core competencies. If you've got those three going, eventually you'll give them the bang for the buck. You know, we're focusing onshore Indonesia, particularly Sumatra. We have a quite an interesting project pipeline that we're getting in. And honestly, I put my crew of Indonesian colleagues against anybody. So you put those three together, and you can't guarantee success, but you can sure at least get the cards on your side.
All right. Well, we'll hold you to it, and hopefully we'll be able to catch up again soon when things are a bit more kind of transparent as to where you're at. So thanks for your time.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.